We present What O Jeeves by P.G. Wodehouse. Starring Michael Horton as Jeeves and Richard Briers as Bertie Wooster. With this week's guest, Maurice Denham as the Reverend Heppenstall. The Great Sermon Handicap.
After Goodwood's over, I generally find that I get a bit restless. I'm not much of a lad for the birds and the trees and the great open spaces as a rule, but there's no doubt London's not at its best in August. The whole town was empty and smelled of burning asphalt. All my pals were away, most of the theatres were shut, and they were taking up Piccadilly in large spadefuls. It was most infernally hot.
Good evening, sir.
Jeeves, I'm not sure I can muster up enough energy to go to bed, don't you know?
The weather is oppressive, sir.
Whew. Not all the soda, Jeeves.
No, sir.
I think we've had enough of the metrop for the time being, Jeeves. We need a change. Shift ho, I think. What?
Just as you say, sir. There is a letter on the tray, sir.
Oh. By Jove, Jeeves. That was practically poetry. Rhymed. Did you notice? Oh, what's this? I see this is rather extraordinary.
Sir?
Well, you know Twing Hall, Lord Wick Hammersley's place.
Very well, sir. I always much enjoy our visits to Twing.
Well, Mr. Little's there. Young Bingo, you know.
Indeed, sir.
Absolutely, in the flesh. He's had to take another of his tutoring jobs.
I trust Mr. Little is in good health, sir.
Well, this letter isn't from him. It's from Eustace. You remember my twin cousins, Claude and Eustace, Jeeves? They're the curse of the human race, you know.
I recall the young gentleman very vividly, sir.
Well, they're down at Twing, too, reading for some exam or other with old Heppenstall, the vicar.
Indeed, sir.
And now young Eustace writes to say, oh, well, you read it, Jeeves.
Very good, sir. The Vicarage, Twing, Gloss. Dear Bertie, do you want to make a bit of money? I hear you had a bad Goodwood, so you probably do. Well, come down here quick and get in on the biggest sporting event of the season. I'll explain when I see you, but you can take it from me that it's all right.
What do you make of that, Jeeves? It's a rummy communication, what?
Very high-spirited young gentlemen, sir, Mr. Claude and Mr. Eustace. Up to some game, I should be disposed to imagine.
Well, yes, but what game, do you think?
It is virtually impossible to say, sir. But I observe that the letter continues over the page.
Huh? What?
Great Sermon Handicap. Runners and Betting. Probable starters. Reverend Joseph Tucker Badgwick, scratch. Reverend Leonard Starkey Stapleton, scratch. Reverend Alexander Jones, Upper Bingley, receives 3 minutes. Reverend W. Dix, Little Clickton in the World, receives 5 minutes. Reverend Francis Heppenstall Twing receives 8 minutes. Reverend Cuthbert Dibble Bousted Parva receives 9 minutes. Reverend Orlo Hoff Bousted Magna receives 9 minutes. Reverend G. Hayward Lower Bingley receives 12 minutes. Reverend James Bates Gandle by the Hill receives 15 minutes. The above have arrived. Prices, 5-2 Tucker Starkey, 3-1 Jones, 9-2 Dix, 6-1 Heppenstall Dibble Hoff, 100-8 The Field.
Do you understand any of that, Jeeves?
No, sir.
Nor do I. Well, I suppose you might as well have a look into it anyway, what?
Undoubtedly, sir.
Righto, then. Oh, pack our spare dickie and a toothbrush in a neat brown paper parcel. Send a wire to Lord Wick Hammersley to say we're coming and buy a brace of tickets on the 2:10 at Paddington tomorrow.
Very good, sir.
When I arrived at the hall the next afternoon, there was a sort of young tennis party in progress. Various strenuous chappies were biffing the ball to and fro in a hearty manner, while other coves watched them and went to sleep. I slid into a vacant deck chair and found that I was sitting next to old Wick Hammersley's youngest daughter, Cynthia, a dashed pretty and lively and attractive girl who'd been a great pal of mine ever since I was a kid.
Hello, Cynthia, old thing. Not playing?
Bertie, so you've arrived.
Yes, I've arrived. Yes, here I am, in fact. I seem to have plunged into quite a gathering of local nibs.
Who are they all?
Oh, just people from round about. You know most of them. Colonel Willis over there and the Spencers.
Of course, yes. And there's old Heppenstall. Who's the other clergyman talking to Mrs. S?
Mr. Hayward from Lower Bingley.
I say, what an amazing lot of clergymen there are here. There's another on the other side by the net.
Oh, that's Mr. Bates, Mr. Heppenstall's nephew. He's an assistant master at Eton.
Oh, it's only holidays, what?
Yes, he's acting as local tenants for Mr. Spettigill, the rector of Gander by the Hill.
Oh, I see. Oh, there's the old egg. I thought he'd be here.
Who? Who are you talking about, Bertie?
Young Bingo Little, great pal of mine. He's tutoring your brother, you know.
Good gracious. Is Mr. Little a friend of yours?
Rather, I've known him all my life.
Then tell me, Bertie, is he at all weak in the head?
Bingo? Well...
I don't mean simply because he's a friend of yours, but he's so strange in his manner.
How do you mean?
Well, he keeps looking at me so oddly.
Oddly? How? Well, give me an imitation.
Well, I can't in front of all these people, Bertie.
Yes, you can. Here, behind my hat.
All right, then. Quick.
Oh. Yes, I recognise symptoms. The open mouth, the dropped jaw, the marked resemblance to a dyspeptic calf. It's all right, Cynthia. No need to be alarmed. He's simply fallen in love with you.
In love with me? Oh, don't be absurd.
Oh, my dear old thing, you don't know young Bingo. He can fall in love with anybody.
Thank you. You're not at your most tactful today, are you, Bertie?
What? Oh, no, I didn't mean it that way, you know. I don't wonder if he's taking to you, Cynthia. You're a topper.
Thank you. He's very good looking, isn't he?
Who? Bingo? Now, really?
Well, I mean, compared with some people.
Who? Well, Boris Karloff or my Aunt Agatha, perhaps. Good look. Well, I think I'll toddle over and have a word with the old ass. Pip, pip, Cynthia.
Well, bye, Bertie.
It's yours, sir, Eustace.
No, it's yours, Claus.
Bingo! Hello!
Oh, Bertie. You're here.
Absolutely.
I didn't know you knew these people.
Me? I've known them since I was a kid. Old Wick Hammersley was a great pal of my governor's.
What? Do you mean to say you've known Lady Cynthia all that time?
Rather. She can't have been seven when I met her first.
Good Lord. I love that girl, Bertie.
Yes. She's a nice girl, of course.
Well, don't speak of her in that horribly casual way. She's an angel, Bertie.
Oh. As it happens, Bingo, I've just been chatting to her.
And?
Nothing.
Well, what did she say, Bertie? Did she talk about me?
This and that.
What did she say, you blighter?
Oh, nothing much. She said she thought you were good-looking.
Look, pop off, old man. There's a good chap. I suddenly had the urge to do a bit of writing.
Writing? You?
Yes, poetry, if you must know. I wish the Dickens she'd been christened something except Cynthia. There isn't a damn word in the language it rhymes with. Ye gods. How I could have spread myself if she'd only been called Jane. Oh. Oh. Oh.
Thank you, Morris.
Thank you both.
Bertie. Eustace, it's Bertie.
Bertie!
Oh, what ho, you blighted twins. You won then?
Thanks to Eustace.
No, thanks to you, Claude.
Good to see you anyway, Bertie. How's the boy?
Oh, I'm all right.
Stout fellow. I knew that letter of mine would fetch you.
You could always bank on Bertie, Eustace, a sportsman to his fingertips. Well, Bertie, has Bingo told you about it?
What?
It! The great event!
What great event?
Oh, I think you'd better start at the beginning, Eustace.
Righto, Claude. Well, it's like this, Bertie. Well, look, apart from tennis, there are absolutely no facilities for relaxation in this place whatsoever. And then Steggles got this idea.
Steggles?
Well, one of our reading party. Between ourselves, rather a worm as a general thing. Still, you have to give him credit for getting this idea.
What idea?
Well, you tell him, Claude.
Me, Eustace?
Yes, go on, you, Claude.
Right-ho. Well, Bertie, you know how many parsons there are around here.
Here, you mean?
I mean in the area. There are about a dozen hamlets within a radius of 6 miles, and each hamlet has a church, and each church has a parson, and each parson preaches a sermon every Sunday. Well, tomorrow week, Sunday the 23rd, we're running the Great Sermon Handicap. Steggles is making the book. Each parson is to be clocked by a reliable steward of the course, and the one that preaches the longest sermon wins. Did you study the race card Eustace sent you?
I couldn't understand what it was all about.
Why, you chump! It gives the handicaps and current odds on each starter. Look, I've got another one here, in case you've lost yours. Now, take a careful look at it. Does anything strike you about it?
It certainly does.
The thing's a sitter for old Heppenstall. He's got the event sewed up in a parcel.
Quite!
Well, that there isn't a parson in the land who would give him 8 minutes.
Absolutely, Bertie.
But your pal Stiggles must be an ass giving him a handicap like that. Why, in the days when I was with him, old Heppenstall never used to preach under half an hour. And there was one sermon of his on brotherly love which lasted 45 minutes if it lasted a second. Has he lost his vim lately or what?
Not a bit of it. Tell him what happened, Eustace.
Well, it was like this, Bertie. The first Sunday we were here, we all went to Twing Church and old Heppenstall preached a sermon that was well under 20 minutes. Well, this is what happened. Steggles didn't notice it, and the Rev didn't notice it himself. But Claude and I both spotted that he had dropped a chunk of at least, well, half a dozen pages out of his sermon case as he was walking up to the pulpit. Well, he sort of flickered when he got to the gap in the manuscript, but he carried on all right. And Steggles went away with the impression that 20 minutes or a bit under was his usual form. The next Sunday, we heard Tucker and Starkey, and they both went well over the 35 minutes. So Steggles arranged the handicapping, as you see on the card.
You must come into this, Bertie. You see, the trouble is that I haven't been, and Eustace hasn't been, and Bingo Little hasn't been.
So you'll have to finance the syndicate, Bertie.
Don't weaken, old man. It's just putting money in all our pockets.
But the thing is, we must get a bet on in Scanter. Steggles will be watching Heppenstall canter again tomorrow morning, and if the old boy's back to his normal form, the price is bound to shorten dramatically in no time.
So you see, we must act now, Bertie.
Steggles is here somewhere. Yes, he's over there. Look. How about it, old lad?
You must come in with us, Bertie. It's like finding money by the bally wayside.
Righto, righto. Now, what's the current price on the twin flyer? 6-1. Then I think a tenner each would be adequate, what?
Rather!
Bertie, you're a corker!
Come on, Eustace, time for business.
We'll report back, Bertie. Pip, pip.
Toodaloo.
Bye.
Bye.
Bertie?
Oh, Bingo. You still around?
When Cynthia smiles, the skies are blue. The world takes on a roseate hue. Birds in the garden trill and sing, and joy is king of everything when Cynthia smiles. When Cynthia frowns...
What the devil are you talking about?
I'm reading you the poem I've just written to Cynthia. I'll go on, shall I?
No.
No?
No, absolutely not. There are far more important matters at stake. Ah, Eustace! Eustace, how do you get on?
The odds have lengthened to a snappy 7-1, Bertie. It seems the Red's subject to hay fever, and Steggles reckons he's taking a big chance by strolling around in the paddock behind the vicarage every morning. Anyway, we're all on at a tenner each.
A tenner on Heppenstall? For me as well?
Even for you, Bingo.
Bertie, you're a good fellow.
Yes, a thousand thanks, Bertie, old egg. Must be popping now, though. See you tomorrow.
Cheer, Eustace.
Yeah.
I say, a tenner on Heppenstall. Now I can see daylight at long last, Bertie. Say I cop, 60 quid here. Then I'll be in a position to go to my uncle and beard him in his lair somewhat. He's quite a bit of a snob, you know, and when he hears that I'm going to marry the daughter of an earl,
You mean Cynthia? I say, old man, you're looking ahead rather far, aren't you?
No, that's all right. It's true nothing's actually settled yet, but she practically told me the other day she was fond of me.
What?
Well, she said the sort of man she liked was the self-reliant, manly man with strength, good looks, character, ambition, and initiative.
I see, Bingo. Look, laddie, leave me now, would you? I see Jeeves approaching with the cup of the cheers and the cucumber sandwiches, so leave me, Bingo. There's a good fellow. Just leave me to my tea.
The next day, at morning service, old Heppenstall fairly took the bit between his teeth and gave us 36 solid minutes on certain popular superstitions. I was sitting next to Steggles in the pew and saw him blench visibly. He was a little rat-faced man with shifty eyes and a suspicious nature, and the first thing he did when we emerged into the open air was to announce formally that anyone who fancied the Rev could now be accommodated at 7:55 on, and he added in a rather nasty manner, if he had his way, this sort of in-and-out running would be brought to the attention of the jockey club, but he supposed there was nothing to be done about it. And so matters stood until Tuesday afternoon, when I was strolling up and down in front of the house with Jeeves, trying to interest him in a little speculation.
Well, that's the scheme, Jeeves. How about it?
Thank you, sir, but I think not.
No sporting blood, eh?
Perhaps it would be more accurate to say, sir, that I would consider any investment at this juncture a trifle injudicious.
Oh, drivel, man. Nothing could possibly go wrong.
Bertie!
Bertie!
Hello, it's the twins. What's up with you two?
Bertie, unless we take immediate action and do a bit of quick thinking, we're in the bally cart.
What? What's the matter?
G. Haywood's the matter.
G. Haywood?
The Lower Bingley outsider, receiving 12 minutes, 100 to 8 against.
Eustace and I happened by the merest fluke to be riding through Lower Bingley this morning.
And you see, there was this wedding at the church, you see, Bertie.
And it suddenly struck us that it wouldn't be a bad move to get a line on G. Haywood's form.
Well, in case he might be a dark horse, you see.
And it was jolly lucky we did, Bertie.
He delivered an address of 26 minutes.
At a village wedding market.
I mean, what will he do when he really extends himself?
There's only one thing to be done, old man.
You must spring some more pounds so that we can hedge on Haywood and save ourselves.
Is the only way out, Bertie?
But I say, you know, I hate the idea of all that money we put on Hepperstall being chucked away.
But what else can you suggest? You don't suppose he can give this absolute marvel 4 minutes and still win, do you?
Mm. Oh, dash it. I do see what you mean. Aha. The soft, low, gentle cough, like a sheep with a blade of grass caught in its throat. Jeeves, you have an idea.
A suggestion merely, sir. I was recalling what you were telling me earlier, sir, about Mr. Heppenstall's voluminous sermon on brotherly love. It occurred to me, sir, that the slight difficulty with which you are at present faced might be avoided were you to ask Mr. Heppenstall, as a personal favour, to preach that same sermon on Sunday next.
Genius! It's a scheme.
A jolly, brainy scheme.
But even so, fizzer as that sermon no doubt is, Bertie, will it be good enough in the face of a 4-minute handicap?
Oh, absolutely. When I told you it lasted 45 minutes, I was probably understating it. I should call it, from my recollection of the thing, nearer 50.
Then pop over tonight, Bertie, and do your best.
Right-ho. Jeeves, thank you.
Not at all, sir. I endeavour to give satisfaction.
I toddled over in the evening and fixed the whole thing up. Old Heppenstall was most decent about the whole affair. He seemed pleased and touched that I should have remembered the sermon all these years, and said that he had once or twice had an idea of preaching it again, only it had seemed to him, on reflection, that it was perhaps a trifle long for a rustic congregation.
And in these restless times, my dear Wooster, I fear that brevity in the pulpit is becoming more and more desiderated by even the bucolic churchgoer, who, one might have supposed, would be less afflicted with the spirit of hurry and impatience than his metropolitan brother. I have had many arguments on the subject with my nephew, young Bates, who is taking my old friend Spettigue's cure over at Gandle by the hill. His view is that a sermon nowadays should be a bright, brisk, straight-from-the-shoulder address, never lasting more than 10 or 12 minutes.
Long? My goodness, Mr. Heppenstall, you don't call that brotherly love sermon of yours long, do you?
It takes fully 50 minutes to deliver.
Surely not.
Your incredulity, my dear Wooster, is extremely flattering. Far more flattering, of course, than I deserve. Nevertheless, the facts are, as I have stated, you are sure that I would not be well advised to make certain excisions and eliminations. You do not think it would be a good thing to cut, to prune?
Don't touch a word of it, Mr. Heppenstall, or you'll spoil the whole thing.
I am delighted to hear you say so, Wooster, my dear fellow. I shall preach the sermon without fail next Sunday morning.
Oh, good egg. What I have always said, and what I always shall say, is that this anti-post betting is a mistake, an error, and a mug's game. You can never tell what's going to happen. If fellows would only stick to the good old SP, there'd be fewer young men go wrong. I hardly finished my breakfast on the Saturday morning when Jeeves meandered in with the most appalling news.
Excuse me, sir. Mr. Eustace on the telephone, from the vicarage.
What? Good Lord, Jeeves. What's the matter, do you think?
Mr. Eustace did not confide in me, sir.
Well, has he got the wind up?
Somewhat vertically, sir, to judge by his voice. He is holding the wire.
By Jove, yes. Hello? Hello?
Bertie, we're sunk, old man. The Rev's blown up.
No.
Yes, coughing in his stable all last night. Hay fever.
Oh, my sainted aunt.
The doctor's with him now, and it's only a question of minutes before he's officially scratched. Well, that means the curate will show up at the post instead. And, well, he's no good at all. He's being offered at 100 to 6, but no takers. What shall we do?
Eustace.
Hello?
What can you get on G. Hayward?
Well, it's only 4 to 1 now. The odds shortened late last night in a significant manner.
Well, 4 to 1 will clear us. Put another 5 all round on G. Hayward. That'll bring us out on the right side of the ledger.
If he wins, yes.
What do you mean? I thought you considered him a cert, bar Hippenstall.
I'm beginning to wonder if there's such a thing as a cert in this world. However, it seems our only chance. So long.
Tinkety-tonk. Oh, what a bally business.
And when we return to the comfort of our own fireside...
The other day, as I was walking over to Fair by the water, I saw the early up against Chief God's work. They did not.
The chill and the heavy wind.
And the lot fell upon his mother,
and the hill did not. And God's vengeance was our heavy wind.
The other day, as I was walking over to Fair by the water,
Hello? Bingo Little? Fine! Splendid! Topping! Eh? Oh, we needn't worry about him. Righto, I'll tell Bertie. He's just got back. Bertie! Bertie! Bertie, that was Eustace! We've won! The report from Lower Bingley's just come in. G. Hayward robs home in 47 minutes, 14 seconds, inclusive of handicap.
I know that, Bingo. I know that. I was there. All the other returns in, are they?
Well, all except Gandle by the Hill, but we didn't worry about young Bates. He never had a chance. Tucker ran a splendid race at Badgwick, but the handicap was too much for him. Starkey had a sore throat and was nowhere. Roberts of Fail by the Water was third, and the field was way down at the 32 minutes mark. Good old G. Hayward. Oh, by the way, Bertie, poor old Jeeves loses his tenor. Ha! Silly ass.
Jeeves? What do you mean?
He came to me this morning, just after you'd set out on your trek to Lower Bingley, and asked me to put a tenor on Bates for him. Bates, of all people. Well, I told him he was a chump and begged him not to throw his money away, but he would do it.
Oh, Jeeves, where did you materialise from?
I beg your pardon, sir. This note arrived for you just after you'd left the house this morning.
Eh? What? Note?
The Reverend Mr. Heppenstall's butler brought it over from the vicarage, sir. It came too late to be delivered to you at the moment.
Well, let's have a look at it, Jeeves.
Yes, sir.
Jeeves, you know you've lost your tenor, don't you, old man? G. Hayward cantered home a popular and worthy winner.
Indeed, sir.
Absolutely. That'll teach you to bet against the form book, Jeeves. I'd have thought someone with your giant brain...
Oh, no!
Bertie, what the dick is the matter?
We're dished, Bingo, dished. Listen to this. The Vicarage, Twing, Gloss. My dear Worcester, as perhaps
yes,
you have heard, young,
you
Bates,
have heard
my nephew,
young Bates, my nephew, is one of the candidates for the headmastership of a well-known public school. And the choice has narrowed down between him and one rival. Late yesterday evening, James received private information that the head of the board of governors of the school proposed to sit under him this Sunday morning in order to judge the merits of his preaching. Most important item in swaying the board's choice. It was too late for him to compose a sermon of suitable length in place of the brief address which, mistakenly, in my opinion, he had designed to deliver to his rustic flock. So, wishing to help the boy, I acceded to his plea that I lend him a somewhat less exiguous homily. I'm telling you all this, my dear Worcester, because I'm willing that you should be disappointed by my unfortunate inability to preach a sermon of which you so flatteringly said you retained a vivid recollection. I suggested to James that he deliver my sermon on brotherly love, which he indicated he would be delighted to do. I recommend, therefore, that you attend a divine service at Gandle by the Hill this a.m., but I trust my nephew's preaching of the sermon will supply you with as pleasant memories as you say you have
as of mine. As you say you have of mine, I remain cordially yours, F. Heppenstall. P.S. Wait for it, Bingo. The hay fever has rendered my eyes unpleasantly weak for the time being, so I am dictating this letter to my butler, Brookfield, who will convey it to you.
Well, I'm dashed. Great Scott, Jeeves, an SP job.
I believe that is the technical term, sir.
So you had inside information, dash it.
Why, yes, sir. Brookfield happened to mention the contents of the note to me when he brought it. We are old friends.
But all I can say is, it's a bit bally thick, preaching another man's sermon. Do you call that playing the game?
Well, my dear old thing, it's quite within the rules. Clergymen do it all the time. They aren't expected always to make up the sermons they preach.
And in the present case, sir, if I may be permitted to take the liberty of making the observation, I think we should make allowances. We should remember that the securing of the headmastership meant everything to the young couple.
Young couple? What young couple?
The Reverend James Bates, sir, and the Lady Cynthia.
What?
Yes, sir. I am informed by her ladyship's maid that they have been engaged to be married for some weeks. Provisionally, so to speak. And his lordship made his consent conditional on Mr. Bates securing a really important and remunerative position.
Engaged to be married?
Yes, sir.
I think I'll go for a walk.
But my dear old thing, it's just lunchtime. The gong will be going any minute now.
I don't want any lunch.
In that episode of What O Jeeves, the parts were played as follows. Jeeves, Michael Horden, Bertie, Richard Briers. The Reverend Heppenstall, Maurice Denham. Bingo Little, Jonathan Cecil. Eustace, David Jason. Claude, Jonathan Lynn. And Cynthia, Carol Marsh. The Great Sermon Handicap was adapted for radio by Chris Miller from the book The Inimitable Jeeves by P.G. Wodehouse. What O Jeeves was produced by David Hatch.